Morning, matey.
Yeah, morning, bud.
Have a good sleep.
Oh, good sleep.
Yeah, nice and warm.
Yeah. Like I said, first couple of, first week, I didn't use the sleeping bag. It's one of those cold weather ones, you know, because it gets too warm.
Yeah.
The last night was just perfect.
Ah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to resort to getting your sleeping bag out.
I had to, yeah.
What did you have before that? Just blankets or?
No, I had a couple of blankets and that was enough, you know.
Yeah.
But you could still feel that chill.
Yeah.
But this sleeping bag just made it a little bit more comfortable. Yeah.
That's the way.
That's it.
Last night we played a bit of the Beach Boys come on. Remember that?
Yeah.
What are you? You're a big fan of rock and roll, and that was your era, wasn't it? You grew up in that era of when rock and roll came in?
Yeah, I mean, rock and roll was sort of, I think it was the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
The big names and big hits come out, you know?
Yeah.
And even just before and that, and it was, I think, more happy music.
Yeah.
You know, everyone sort of rocked and jived, and young and old sort of, partying down the beach or wherever. It's got everyone rocking, you know. And that's why it sort of...
They didn't have that before. Before that come in, it just wasn't around, was it?
No, I just...
It was like a new thing.
Yeah, I think, the Beatles and Elvis all started off early in the piece, and you had the blues, and that's still popular, you know. And I think that started off in the cotton fields with the Africans, African-Americans, now they say. But definitely the rock and roll era, that's been and gone, but still around, you know, still popular, yeah.
And you remember it as a happy time?
I think so, you know, yeah. You know, happy times now, it's a different style and kind of music now, yeah, but more sort of sad with... Everyone's caught up in what's happening around the world, and not happy at all. So
you reckon the young fella should get a bit of Buddy Holly and Beach Boys and get out of the beach and just rock and roll a bit? You reckon that's good advice?
Oh, but it's the right advice, you know. It's you know, get out there, just enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
You know, be happy and...
But you're right, it was the music that made you feel happy, didn't it?
It does, yeah. Music sort of connects, you know?
Yeah.
Music connects everyone. And whether you're down in the dumps and you're hitting the bottle or whatever, you know, you always seem to find a tune, something to turn on or listen to, you know? Mm.
And what was your favourite? What did you enjoy listening to?
Look, a lot of country, classical, a lot, pretty well, the three main ones, rock and roll, country, you know, classical and blues.
How did you, you didn't have a CD player or anything like that, how did you listen to it back then? Was it just on a record player or on the radio?
Most of it's through radio, you know, because you had no CD players. And, you had a record player, someone had one, or family had one. Yeah, I mean, it's only later when the tapes and all that came out, you know. So everyone went mad to get one, because they... Otherwise, you could only listen through the radio, you know.
Yeah.
Like that in the stock camp, all of us fellas, I remember Matt Iser, again back in the early 60s, I think it's called 4LM Mount Isa Country.
Yeah.
And pretty well all, everyone around the, across the territory and across some of the states put in a request, you know, what song you wanted played.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then every evening after a feed, then everyone would sit around and listen to all the country requests that come into the radio station.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was another way of connecting to everyone out in the bush and that. So they had the, in the camp, we had the big radio, you know.
Yeah.
You just threw an aerial over a tree and there's your signal, you know. Yeah.
You did that, did you? You had to put an aerial up?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just threw a bit of wire over a tree.
That's all, you know, yeah. Yeah. Yep. And that's gave you a bit of music and a bit of news.
Yeah, right. And I remember when I was on the cattle station Malungara, it was, you know, especially the first month, it was a bit of a lonely feeling because you just didn't know anyone. You're out in the middle of nowhere. Like, just being in the middle of nowhere is a bit of a, on your own. Well, I mean, it's not a station, but I was only young and I had a lonely feeling, you know. And I remember listening to Macca on the radio because I knew Mum and Dad used to always listen to the radio, the Macca. Remember Macca?
Yeah, Macca, yeah.
And for some reason, I listened to that on the, was it Sunday morning or something, and it made me feel a bit more connected, you know what I mean? But that's what the radio did, didn't it? It connected people.
It did.
Even though you're all just listening, but it's what connected everyone, isn't it?
But it just distracted it to you from that loneliness, I suppose, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it connects you with other people and music and
because you could be right out here on a cattle station, middle of nowhere, but you could still listen to happening, you know?
Yeah.
It was a really important part of social life, the radio, wasn't it?
Mm. It is, you know?
And, did many people have an album player, like an LP record player? Did many of the cattle station owners? Well,
quite a few, the big LP players, you know?
Yeah.
And then you had the little smaller ones in that version. They're pretty well at the first lot, you know? Yeah.
And did you go to many radios? Remember on Malungara, the only time you get a day off is when the radio come up. Did you go to a few radios and...
Yeah, we went to a few radios, you know? The main one was Alice's yearly event, but then you had a couple of bush road style radios, you know, where all the station people got together, all the ringers got together to more or less have fun, you know, just engage and meet people. Share stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you ever get on a bull or a buck jump or anything?
Yeah. A couple in my time, you know.
What did you used to get on? Bit of everything?
I like the saddle bronc, and like I said, the bush you could hang up pretty well, you know, and then in the rodeos, the old Cox Poley style of saddle was just sort of fading away a little bit, and then you had the ARRA, which is Australian Rough Riders Association, proper bucking saddle, you know. I think they followed America, same thing. And they were a bit different to get first feel of, but then once you work out how it sort of with the right stirrup adjustments and that, and your knees grip, you could hang on pretty well, you know.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have long to learn, like you only had 8 seconds, didn't you?
That's it.
What was that first saddle you mentioned? I hadn't heard of that before.
Cox Poley.
That was just a...
They're part of the... There was two or three other brands, you know?
Yeah.
That came out at the same time. But the Cox Poley was... Because I had one, I picked up an old one from old Mac Chalmers. He had one sitting in the back there, and pretty well seen the day. So then I did it up.
Okay.
Yeah, I did all the candle lining, all the stitching, hand stitching. And
what, recently or just recently or a while back?
No, about 40, 50 years ago. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, when we were still playing around with animals and horses. And,
And so you basically got an old saddle and did it up for yourself.
Yeah. We used to do a lot of stitching, you know, ourselves, like out in the camp. You'd use pop rivets, but a few of us like that stitching, you know, but it looks nice,
yeah.
You know, you wax your thread and then get two needles and away you go, you know. Mm.
So you used to make a lot of your own gear?
Belts, buckles, knife pouches, even saddlebags, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
Same with bridles. We'd make our own bridles and halters and all that.
Had you?
Yeah.
What did you use for reins? Was it just thin, long strip of leather or rope or...?
Long strip of leather,
mostly
red hide leather.
Yeah,
long strip, and it's only lately then the ropes came in. You know, the soft ropes.
It used to be always just long leather strips.
That's all. And same with making because early days we started off. Didn't last long, but towards the end of it, because we had a bullock hide, and then we'd make our own head ropes and leg ropes. Out of cowhide. So,
what did you have for blankets, like saddle blankets? Was it just a big thick blanket, or?
Back then, because R.M. Williams were going, and they had the proper blankets, you know.
Yeah,
he cut it up to fit the horse and the and saddle to put your saddle on.
Yeah.
And then you'd sort of double it, you know. So you could flip it over, and then you could, if you don't get a chance to wash it, you can open it up and flip it over on the inside, you know.
So you'd buy a big one and just cut it up to suit what horse size saddle you had.
That's it, you know. In the saddle rooms, we used to have it there, so you couldn't go willy-nilly and do what you want. You just had to have your leather, your rivets, your stitching gear and bridles. And the hobbles, we used to make it out of bullock hide too, you know, with the Turk's head.
Yeah,
same as what you got on your...
And what do you remember about R.M. Williams? Did you ever bump into him, or did you, you know, he's a bit of a legend today, although sort of, I suppose, fading now a little bit because, you know, he passed on and the company was sold. And I remember when I was growing up, it was all the thing, everyone wanted to have an R.M. Williams shirt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about R.M. Williams? He's obviously a major outfitter for the bush, wasn't he, back then?
He pretty well opened up everything, you know, for the bush.
Yeah.
Everything was just R.M. Williams, and with his background, he knew, you know, what people wanted.
Yeah.
What style and what suited and, colours and it was all good gear, you know, good, long-lasting, heavy-duty.
Yeah.
Yeah, from your boots to your shirt to your trousers and hats and all that, you know. It really opened up, but now it's sort of fading away. A lot of people, as normal, you know, things fade away, and then it fades further away, and people, all they see is the brand R.M. Williams, you know.
Because he grew up in stations, didn't he? Much like you did.
He did. I think that's where he started off in. I don't know. I've got no idea. Back of Burke somewhere, he started stitching up some of the riders' boots.
Mm.
when he was out there on the camp, and then that was his passion and in life, and he knew what the people needed. That's what they needed out here. Someone to do a bit of leather work, saddlery, and he never looked back.
Did you ever own a pair of his boots?
Yeah, we had quite a few, you know, over the years.
Because they're quite expensive now, but back then you could afford them? You could afford a pair of his boots?
Back then we could, you know, when you go into town, you know, you get a good wear out of them, and once a year you'd go into town, like rodeo or something like that, and then you'd buy a second pair, and then you'd keep that, and you'd break it in, you know, like breaking in, get it more sort of used to your style, your size of your feet, and then you'd swap back to the old ones because it's more comfortable, you know, it's worn in.
And if you didn't buy R&M boots, what sort of boots could you buy?
I can't remember there was any other boots around, you know?
Just that, really. Everybody used to wear them.
Like for the stock camps,
everyone had R&M boots on.
Mainly because the heels, you know? You had the Santa Fe's and the Cuban heels, which gave you a bit more length, because in the stirrups, you know, you don't want to wear thongs or runners. Because just imagine if your foot slips through the stirrup and you're hooked up in it. You're pretty well dead, you know, because you hang up and the horse is going wild and give you a good bashing anyway, you know.
Yeah.
There's no way, unless the stirrup somehow snapped off, but the stirrup leather is pretty strong, so it normally doesn't. Sometimes it might come out of the keeper up the top.
Yeah.
But depends which angle you were stretched out on, you know. If you're up 6 foot in here, and it's it'd come out.
Yeah. I got hung up once just recently. I was with a mate in Gloucester helping him muster some cows, and the horse was on the side of a wet hill, and it slipped over, and it just in a second slipped over, and we hit the ground, and the horse bounced up, and I was left on the ground, you know.
Yeah.
And then he took off, and my foot was, I had boots on, but somehow I got just hung up, and it went galloping off. And all I could see is these hooves going past my head, you know, and I thought I was dead, you know. And then I saw the big stump coming.
Yep.
And I was going to get, you know, if I hit that stump, I was a goner. And then the stirrup, I had a little Alan Ruddock saddle.
Right.
And you ever heard of them, Alan Ruddock?
No.
I bought it from Ronnie Wall, and the stirrup iron, the stirrup strap come off the hook.
Yep.
Yeah, lucky. Yep. Just before, it probably only went 20 metres, but.
Yeah, very lucky, yeah.
You know, after that, it's always been a fear of mine of getting hung up, you know, because it's frightening, eh?
It's bad, eh, you know, yeah.
Especially out in the bush, you know.
Yep.
Like, if you're in an arena in a rodeo, it's one thing, because someone's going to pull the horse up. But in the bush, you know, it'd kill you, eh?
It will. That's always important, you know, like families got animals, you're better off teaching your kids bareback, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, get them used to the balance, no saddle, you know, and bareback, and that builds up their confidence in that, and then you start sort of giving them advice. This is the reason why, you know, you just got to watch your foot, don't go fully into the stirrup iron and get caught up and that, because it's frightening.
Did you have any bad bust ups? Well, you had that one time you broke your leg. Or do you see many blokes get beat up, you know, on the horses, like getting fallen off and that?
Not bad. A couple of times you see them sort of get hooked up and, luckily not really bad, you know, because.
Just all really careful too, eh?
You're hundreds of miles or kilometres from emergency. If you've got no airstrip, you know, you've got no medical gear in the vehicles.
Yeah.
Because that we never thought of those, you know. The nearest medical help you can get is back at the homestead, you know, with the two-way radio to the flying doctor.
Mm.
And, But, but a lot of the time, you know, everyone's sort of fairly cautious, and also there's times that you throw cautious to the wind too, you know?
And Deepwell, it was a Deepwell station you were at?
Yeah.
They, after you broke your leg and you're with Margaret and what was her husband's name? Rex or?
Oh, Rex.
Yeah. And then you went to Deepwell, not far away.
Yeah, because they pretty related to the Hayes family, you know. Hayes family had two properties, Andulia Station and then Deepwell. And, so they sent me there and that's where I pretty well sort of learned everything about life and survival and cooking and animals and, oh, you know, your fencing, your boar, your welding, your mechanical and all that. So I had to do everything.
Yeah, there's a big station. And so you started as a jackaroo.
Not quite big. I think it was 300-400 square miles.
Yeah.
But that's big enough, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yeah. But...
So you started as jackaroo and then you just, you know, gradually learnt everything.
Yeah. And jackaroo is what we call doing your apprenticeship, you know?
Yeah.
Like in the trucking industry, you start off just being a yard boy or grease monkey, you know?
Yeah.
Then jackaroo, same thing, you start off doing all the fiddly little jobs that... the experienced guys don't want to do, you know?
Yeah.
So they put that task on all the young new beginners.
Yeah.
Mm.
And how long were you doing that for on Deepwell? Several years?
I think probably around 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
I did go back once after, but the passion had sort of gone, you know. The wide open spaces wasn't there anymore. You know, you had helicopters coming in, you had motorbikes, and everything was fenced off. So I was pretty well sort of drifting, you know,
So the days of those traditional stockmen that you grew up with sort of changed with helicopters, fencing, and motorbikes, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then your cattle truck started to come in, you know.
Yeah.
Single decks, single drives, and they were a big thing. And then that period just seems like it was just overnight that everything sort of changed, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the world keeps changing, doesn't it? You know.
It does. Yeah.
And so then you sort of left the saddle and started driving trucks.
I did, yeah, because it sort of still gave me that freedom and an open space. And you saw a lot of country and you met a lot of different people and you were still sort of involved with animals and that, but in a different way, you know? That's it.
Would have been, even the back then driving trucks would have been very different to today, you know, with the older trucks and the rough roads. But, it's getting easier now, I suppose, isn't it?
Oh, a lot easier, you know, yeah.
And you drove out at Headland and you spent a bit of time in Headland, didn't you, driving trucks over there?
Yeah, look, I started off with Tanamites, with Rogers there, and Alan Rogers was the manager. Sort of known each other since school days, you know.
Okay.
But he ran a good good show, you know. He's, all his trucks were just immaculate and heavy duty, top of the range, well maintained.
Yeah.
And he set a high standard for the drivers, you know, and all the drivers didn't bat an eyelid, you know. They just go, go, go all the time. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then from there, you sort of move on to other companies. I was called Haulage. I did sort of Alice Darwin, Mount Isa. Then you sort of find out that, okay, there's probably, you know, like in the mining company, they had the Rosser system, you know? So I said, oh, yeah, it might be easier life, you know? So I did that for a while, yeah. Then I come across to Port Hedland a few times.
Yeah.
And, yeah, a lot of mates there, met up with a lot of mates, good blokes. Then those blokes come from Queensland, Brisbane, Adelaide, anywhere, you know, they'd fly in, fly out. And
yeah. A lot of ex-stockmen.
A lot of ex-stockmen, and but we all connected, you know.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the truck companies wanted men off the land, you know.
Oh, look, we've always looked for young and older people with that farming or station experience, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they, like I said, they're multi-skilled and they work from daylight till dark.
Mm.
So they're used to hard work, they're used to being driven, and also they can get themselves out of any troubles, you know, because they've got that bush mechanical experience, skills, and yeah, and pretty well no time wasters, you know.
I mean, that's what I did, but it's a great thing for a young fella to go to a cattle station. You can still do it, you know, and spend 6 months or 12 months, because it teaches you a lot of life skills, doesn't it, you know?
It does.
Work for a lot of men, and, you know, it's not an easy life, but it's a good grounding for young people to do, isn't it, you know?
Oh, it's bloody good grounding, you know, yeah. And because I did spend on Jim Cooper. He had Bulk Hall, he had RTA, which is Road Train Australia. And he was possibly last of the gentlemen, you know. He's an old Jim. He made a lot of men, you know, out of people that would have gone in other directions.
Yeah.
And where a lot of those drivers said, you know, oh, Jim made me, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And same with all of us. And he's one of these guys, he'd visit and he'd show up, and he didn't have to say much. Somehow the expectation was there that you guys are doing a great job.
Yeah.
Keep doing it, you know.
Where was this at?
I was based in Wyndham.
Okay.
There for a couple of years.
So he was in Wyndham.
No, his base was main hub was Darwin.
Okay.
Yeah, he just had branches and depots. Yeah.
And he would travel around and visit.
Of course, there. Yeah, he'd travel around and catch up with managers and drivers, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to show face and.
Look,
he's the one that really sort of stands out to me as a genuine sort of human being, and believed in you and everyone, you know? And he had good gear, he had good workshops, mechanic, because the trucks were working hard, and we were working hard too, because in Wyndham, that you're doing 16-hour run, so you're looking at 17, 18-hour days, you know?
Yeah, right.
Days, and after... got to move that stick for a minute. The smoke's getting in. It was a job where pretty well everyone after 2 years burned out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you can go and have a a 3 weeks break, you come back and still get you.
Yeah, yeah.
So you needed to get it right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, just too much, you know. But yeah. Then at the end of it, then we shifted our operation down to Derby, where you're cutting out a, same place, cutting out of Fitzroy. But our depot was in Derby, and that was, I left after that.
Mm. Yeah. And what made a good boss, you know? Like a good boss that you looked up to, what do you think made a good manager?
I think that's, you know, a good manager would that sort of give you clear instructions on where the company's heading, you know?
Yeah.
And what the expectation, what and it's sort of preparing and, you know, making sure the gear's running and ordering things when you break down and so on, so everyone's on top of it and no one's losing their cool, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, then you've got management, other type of management, authoritarian, more or less, you know, and too much pressure, so they get angry and at drivers, at anything and everything, and then they get flustered and they get pissed off. And where, like the gym, you know, it's cool, calm, and they said, no, don't worry about it, you know. Yes.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's another day, you know.
All right, mate, well, today's another day, and getting light, and we'll
actually, we're pretty well close to the end of our journey, eh?
We've only
got another day or two, that's it.
Yeah.
No more morning sessions.
Yeah, well, we're talking about where the boys are going to head off at Halls Creek or Billy Luna, and
that's right, yeah.
So it's going to be sad to see the Kiwi boys go.
Yeah, definitely.
You form a bond. You definitely form a bond, don't you, out here? Because you're relying on each other, you know, and spend a lot of time together.
Yep. No, and it's been a good journey, you know. Mm. Interesting one, and it's new for all of us.
Yeah.
Because we haven't been on this before.
Yeah, yeah. You don't know what's up the road, do you?
Yeah, yeah. And it's good you're able to have that Starlink, because it's, showing some of the people around across the Australia or globe that this is what's happening here. This is a type of country. And
hey, what if anyone's got any questions for Uncle Richard, or I suppose any of us, but any questions, they can just put them in the comments and we can ask.
Yeah, through you guys, you know.
Because
I'll spend a week or so in Broome with my daughter and grandson, and then
you're looking forward to that,
and yeah catching up, then I'll head back down south then.
All right, thank you, Richard.
All right,
you, mate.
Catch you, bud. Yep.